Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, August 17th, 2020. Alex Brown joins me, as always. Alex, how are things?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
So we got a lot to tackle today. As always, you picked out three ApplyWire candidates this week for the wiretaps portion of the episode, and we've got a few quick updates. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's been happening? Because after a kind of calm week 2 weeks ago, this past week was a little bit busier on LiveWire. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's been going on there?
Yeah, I mean, we've just seen some of the schools releasing candidates off their wait lists. I don't know if they've released all candidates to this point, but definitely some folks getting released. I think Duke was certainly one of the schools that did this. And it's obviously been a long journey and a long road for a lot of these folks, holding on tight to the very end. But the sentiment seems pretty positive. They're moving on and you know, going to the school, you know, their other options or whatever it might be. But yeah, no, we're seeing a little bit of that activity. We're in August now, Graham, so things supposed to be kicking off on campus if they're allowed on campus.
Yeah, I want to say I totally agree with you. These folks have been on a really long journey who are waitlisted until here we are, August. And I feel for them, especially for those of you, if you're listening, who don't have another choice and we're hanging on to hope to get in off a waitlist. So obviously, it's tough, but I think, as you said, a lot of the candidates had other choices and are just, you know, going somewhere else or virtually attending somewhere else for the time being as schools kind of figure out COVID. I did want to say that's actually a really good segue into the next class in the MBA Admissions Academy, which will take place tomorrow. And it's going to be, we're going to have a section in that class about reapplication. So if you were waitlisted and hung on all this time and didn't get in and don't have any other options, you're probably thinking about reapplying. And we're going to talk about that. The central theme of this Admissions Academy lesson, though, is really about the data forms and all the kind of odds and ends that you fill out online after you've done your essays and gotten your recommendations and everything. So we'll dive into that because schools have a lot of really crazy or just kind of one-off questions that people don't really anticipate. And if they're leaving data form completion till kind of the tail end of the application process, like the night of the deadline or something, they can really throw people a kind of a curveball when you're asked like a kind of serious question, like in 200 characters, describe your short and long-term career plan, you know, or something. Mm. So, and that's actually pretty straight ahead, right? But there are others that are, you know, just kind of different questions, like tell us which of these traits from a list, you know, best exemplify who you are. So we'll get into all that stuff. Hopefully people will join. It's been a lot of fun leading that with you. So we'll see. We've had good crowds every lesson. So we'll see how it goes. Only other news I had, Alex, before we dive in is that we continue to run admissions director Q&As, and we connected with the director of admissions at Columbia recently for a really good Q&A that unveils a little bit about what they're looking for in the essays and how their interview process works, and did the same with Vanderbilt, the Owen School over there. So yeah, stay abreast of that stuff on the website. And then the final thing we ran is we actually ran an admissions tip on whether or not somebody should use a consultant when they're applying to business school. And I will say, you know, full disclaimer, Clear Admit used to do admissions consulting. We used to literally work one-on-one with candidates many years ago at this point, before we really morphed into the community site that we are today. So we have a point of view on this, but I think that the admissions tip we posted is really useful if you're kind of weighing, oh, should I pay someone to read my file and give me feedback or not? So check that out as well. Anything else, Alex, that you wanted to share before we dive in?
No, I mean, I just back to the data forms lesson that we're doing tomorrow. You talk about folks, you know, filling out the data form at the last minute on the deadline day or whatever, submitting the application. I'm a firm believer that the data form should be the first thing you tackle. And forms the fundamental basis of your application. So there's no point in writing your essays unless you know exactly what the data forms are asking, for example.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. We'll talk about this kind of stuff on tomorrow. And let's kick on.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point because I do think that people tend to leave the stuff to the end, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it's something that they should figure out first. So in any event, we'll get into it tomorrow. The only other thing I wanted to mention today is, and I kind of hinted at this last week, but we're getting closer and closer to unveiling a kind of top secret project that's going to be really cool for applicants this year. So stay tuned. We may actually invite some of our loyal, you know, kind of podcast listeners to help us out with this top secret project. So stay tuned. We're working on it and I'm really excited. I can't really say any more at this point, but it's going to be really cool. So that's
great vaporware though.
Oh, I know. Well,
top secret and really cool. I mean, okay, I don't know what you're doing.
I will give a slight hint, and that is that, as everyone knows, ClearAdmit has a ton of data about admissions, and we're going to be unveiling some very cool ways for you all to use that data. So we'll go from there. hopefully that helps, Alex. So let's dive in and talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person's applying to four schools. They want to start in the fall of 2021, and the schools are Cornell, Dartmouth, Kellogg, and UVA Darden. This person's been working in chemical manufacturing, and they want to shift out of that into consulting and maybe tech. And the companies they're targeting in the short term are Accenture, Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. GMAT score 710, although they are planning on a retake and thinking they can boost that to maybe 750. And the GPA is a 3.03, 4 years of work experience. And this person is location agnostic in terms of where they end up after business school. They did indicate that they have a lot of experience leading like digital transformation, and they've done this type of work at both a Fortune 100 chemical company and a second well-known chemical company as well. So they've had these very quant intensive tech roles leading these kind of transformations, and they're going to write about that in their essays. They said they know that they're GPA is a weak area, and so there's been some discussion on the site about that. So I'll let you kind of dive in. They did mention some other things they do, and we can shed light on that as well. But let's start with just the basics here. What do you make of this candidate in terms of GPA and that concern that they have?
Quite frankly, Graham, I think this candidate has a lot to offer. If the work experience is as described, leading digital transformation in the chemical industry in a couple of companies, that to me suggests significant impact and so on and so forth. That all sounds very good, I think. They have a 710 on the GMAT. They're going to retake the GMAT to try to boost it to 750. They're doing that simply because they're concerned that their GPA at 3.03 is their weakest link. On top of that, they are doing MBA math, I believe they said. Mm-hmm. So they're taking every sort of opportunity, as it were, to try to shore up that GPA issue. So, and quite frankly, Graham, I think chemical engineering, assuming that is the undergrad, is probably the most challenging of the engineering disciplines. And we know that engineering itself is a challenging sort of discipline for undergrads. So I was actually quite surprised that they said they're going to do MBA math. I figured a chemical engineer sort of poo-poos at the sort of math that we do in business school. But no, I like that. So frankly, Graham, I think there's a lot to like here. I think they can overcome this GPA with all the stuff that they're doing. One thing that did stand out for me in terms of their GPA, and I'm going to read this to you directly and see what you think. It says, I know my GPA isn't the best. I explained in my essays that I needed to work 40 or 50 hours a week in order to put myself through school. In addition to my work schedule, I held several leadership positions in student organizations, including being a CFO of an organization that donated $1 million to the construction of a new building on campus. So I'm wondering if this candidate even had the time to go to any of his classes or her classes, given, you know, the weight of like working 40, 50 hours a week and the significant involvement on campus. So, yeah, that kind of stood out for me a little bit. Is that doable, Graham?
Yeah, so I think what you're getting at is sometimes we have a tendency in the application process to kind of, you want to list everything you did, and suddenly it looks like you had more activities than there are hours in the day. This raised an eyebrow for me too. It's like, well, if you're working 50 hours a week and you're in class full time and you're in several leadership roles on campus, like where does all the time go, right? So I think it'll be really important for this person to, you know, don't overestimate any of your time commitments, but share them. And I obviously, you know, 3.03 in a tough major while working 40, 50 hours a week and leading things on campus, like there's a good story there in terms of explaining why the GPA maybe didn't add up. I hear you. I was kind of like, wow, how are they doing all that? You don't want the admissions committee to sort of start raising an eyebrow in that sense. So I think, yeah, they're just going to need to be straightforward about exactly how much time they were spending doing stuff.
Yeah. And there's also a little bit of another risk there is in terms of their priorities. So if their priorities are running leadership on campus, And what suffers is their GPA. It's like, well, you're coming to our MBA program. Are you actually going to attend classes mm-hmm. and contribute in the classroom? Or are you simply going to find the most interesting club that you can find and try to get a leadership position to recruit into whatever it is you're planning to do? So,
yeah.
You know, it's we want, when we're bringing in candidates, we want candidates that are serious, not only in terms of their extracurricular activity, which is very important in the MBA experience, but also that they're taking their classroom time
yeah.
seriously too.
Yeah, agreed. A couple like side points on this. So you mentioned that they actually indicate they've completed the MBA math course. And I just wanted to mention for our listeners who don't know, MBA math is a class you can take online. I think it was started by a former adjunct professor at Tuck. And it's just literally a series of courses and stuff you do to get ready for business school. And several of the business schools are really familiar with it and like it. And I will also say, like, we don't have any skin in that game. Like, we don't deal with MBA math or anything. I'm just telling you in case you don't know what it is and you're a candidate that needs to bolster your quantitative profile before you go to business school. And there are other things out there, too. But I just wanted to mention that. I'm on the fence with this candidate because, you know, on the one hand, you say, well, it's just the GPA. Everything else is pretty stellar. I mean, they actually indicated that outside of work, they're a mentor in the Big Brother, Big Sister organization. And, you know, their mentee has like a learning disability and they've, you know, gotten that mentee to like pass through all of the classes. And so things are going well there. And I also wanted to mention that this person has some other hobbies. And one of them is leatherworking and blacksmithing, which I got to be honest, I have never seen in an MBA application profile. So that's interesting. And hopefully that comes out in the file in some way, shape or form. It doesn't need to be a central theme, but it's just, you know, kind of an interesting thing to do. So I do like this candidate and I think they have a lot of potential. The issue for me is, you know, how do they overcome that GPA? Obviously the GMAT could really be game changing. I mean, if this person has a 750, and a good explanation as to why in a tough major they had a 303, I'm beginning to buy in, you know, but I think they're going to really need to boost the GMAT to get into the top schools on their list.
I think that's fair enough, Graham.
Yeah. So based on how that goes, I think, you know, they can add schools at the top or the bottom of that list based on what happens with the GMAT in my mind. All right. So enough said. Thanks for that. Thanks to that person for posting. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's applying to 5 schools, again, looking to start in the fall of 2021, and the schools are Dartmouth, Duke, Michigan, Rice, and UVA Darden. This person has been working in Big Four consulting and wants to have a post-MBA career in either consumer goods, auto, aerospace, manufacturing. Like, they have a bunch of options here, and they listed a number of companies, 3M, Coke, General Mills, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Nissan, so all over the map here. GMAT score 720, GPA a perfect 4.0. They've been working for 4 years, located in Houston, and again, agnostic as to where they land post-MBA in terms of geography. They indicate that they want to use the MBA to pivot from consulting into industry management, ideally through a leadership development program, and they just mentioned they've spent the last 3 years working with banking and insurance clients, streamlining cost structures and improving processes. So, yeah, they have this kind of plan to get into a leadership program, but you sort of probed a little bit around their goals. So do you want to talk about that and what you think of this candidate overall?
Yeah, I mean, I like this candidate. I mean, for maybe slightly different reasons than I liked the first candidate, but like this candidate nonetheless, not least of which, if they got a 4.0 GPA, Graham. So back to the issue we discussed in, you know, with the last candidate, this candidate clearly spent a lot of time in the classroom. so that's very good. And, you know, they marry that with a 720 on the GMAT. I mean, these numbers are very good. And yeah, they've done the sort of Big Four consulting. I'm not saying that standard pre-MBA sort of work, but reasonably standard when you're targeting top schools, mm-hmm. And so forth. So some good stuff here, I think. And you know, what do they want to do? They want to get into a leadership development program, which again is something that's I'm not saying reasonably common among MBA candidates, but is not unusual either. Where I was a little bit, I don't know if concerned is the right term, but had questions, is having some kind of potential industry focus, Graham, in terms of going into a leadership development program. It seems to me their goal is to get into a leadership development program at a top firm, but they are completely industry agnostic in terms of what that firm does. It could be the automotive sector, could be the healthcare sector, could be the insurance sector. And I could try to name, you know, three or four other sectors that are completely different to the ones that I've just named. And that strikes me as a missed opportunity in terms of really strengthening the application, yeah. Graham. I think it would make a little bit more sense if they could find a little bit of a passion about a particular industry and marry that to their goals. Would you agree with that, or do you have a different take? Because I'm less familiar, I would say, probably with the overall scope of leadership development programs.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree, missed opportunity, right? I think whenever you can give your candidacy a little bit of a focus, it helps. Although I recognize, and I'm going to go out on a limb and just sort of guess, that this person ultimately would love to be CEO of a Fortune 100 company someday. Now you might say, well, wouldn't anybody? but I think that's probably where they're, because they mentioned in the note that they're really interested in leading a large company. They did mention not tech. That's the only, so they're kind of like anything but tech. But I still think that leaves a lot of, you know, there's a lot of runway there. It's like you could go to American Express and do, they have a, you know, a leadership program, I believe, for MBA grads. And GE traditionally has had one. And a lot of the like healthcare companies have them. And you know, a lot of the firms on this person's list. So it would be interesting if they had a bit more of a focus. And the one that jumps out at me right away is, well, they've been working with banking and insurance clients at a Big Four. And so maybe something in finance, you know, Amex, even GE does a lot of finance related stuff too. So there are ways for them to, you know, have a focus, but not end up, I mean, obviously they're not, they don't have to stay in that sector for the rest of their career, but I think it would help, as you say, to like have that focus. I also think that, you know, they have a 4.0, 720, as you point out, good numbers. Their handle, their username, Big4Aggie, makes me think that they're a UT grad. And I did wonder, they had Rice on the list, but not UT Austin for business school as a potential target. And I thought, oh, maybe they don't want to double up. That might be what's going on there, because people rarely want to go back to the same school. But overall, I think this is a solid candidate. And they did mention that they do a lot of volunteer work for their church. And so there's like a lot, and they detailed that in the post, which you can read on the site. But there's a lot to go from that they could use in their application there. And so, yeah, I think if they can develop the focus, they're in good shape. Mm. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to throw ball right back at you, Graham. Why isn't this person applying to M7 type caliber program?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, the one thing that I thought when I saw the post is I sort of wondered, where's Kellogg, especially if they want to do, you know, kind of, because they talked, some of the companies they're mentioning are kind of consumer goods companies. And I thought, oh, you know,
yeah.
And another one that jumps to mind, which it may not be on everyone's list, but Indiana is really good at that as well, the Kelley School. And I recognize that's not M7 or anything, but it's another school that places really well in that domain if they're looking to go into like a leadership development program for a big company. Yeah, it is a good question. I think the real issue is going to be, like you alluded to earlier, are they going to be a little kind of plain whatever, plain vanilla kind of flavor for the admissions process? You know, Big Four consulting, 720 GMAT is, you know, a little below the average for some of the M7, but decent. They went to UT and got a 4.0. Is that viewed in the same way as if they'd gone to, you know, Princeton and had a 4.0? Maybe not, right? So I need to know more, but I think you're right. They could potentially throw, I mean, especially with this.
You're pretty harsh on these numbers, Graham. I think a 720 and a 4.0 is pretty damn fantastic. I mean, whether they get into an M7 or not, they need to apply to at least one of them and know.
Yeah.
When you know, they get their results and so on and so forth, that they applied to the best schools that they had a chance to and whatever. I mean, I could see them, like, you know, Tuck's obviously a very good school, Duke, Ross, they're all very good schools. But I mean, if they put their apps together and do a really good job with their execution, you could see them getting a place across the board. And if that's the reality, it's like, well, actually, you messed up on your app strategy because you just don't know if you could have gone somewhere else that's, you know, at a level higher or something. So
yeah.
I would truly encourage this candidate to at least look at one or two programs just the next tier above. Mm-hmm. And if you apply to those and fail and get admitted to some of the ones in the target schools now, then at least you know that you hit the right target.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say on this candidate is, it seems like their school selection is more of a, like, for the most part, like a non-urban center. You know, they've got Darden and you know, Tuck. You know, Duke is in Durham, but it's a, you know, residential campus. It's not really an urban campus, right? So they seem to be avoiding the big city kind of setting. But I agree with you that if this person, like, if they want to be CEO of a Fortune 100 company or something someday, then yeah, why isn't HBS on the list? You know, I mean, they've got Darden on the list, which is a case study program, much in the way that HBS is. And so, yeah, they could, I agree with you. They could throw, even though I did say, you know, they might be a little plain vanilla, I think that if they weave everything together, the church volunteer work, the work experience, you know, the solid GPA, it could happen. So I would not rule it out. And I think you're right. They might run the table on the schools they have here. And so then they would be left asking, like, well, did I apply to schools that are, you know, competitive enough? So by all means, like, throw in an app to a top, you know, M7 type school or something and see what happens.
Very good.
Any other thoughts on them? Let's move on then. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So moving right along, Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person has a whopping 10 schools on their list, but they're just considering at this point, obviously, and they're hoping to start in the fall of 2021. The schools are Berkeley, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, MIT, NYU, Stanford, Penn, and Yale. So that's the list. And this person has been working in venture capital. They'd love to pivot and work in the tech space post-MBA, and they have a lot of the usual suspects on their company target list: Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, and Uber. And the GMAT score for this candidate was 740, GPA 3.13, and they have 5 years of work experience. They're located in New York, and they say that they've spent 5 years working in venture capital, and they also founded a nonprofit that helps underrepresented minority entrepreneurs create startups and get access to funding. They've been doing that for 3 years now, but they want to transition to a large tech company in a strategy or operations role so they can get, like, hands-on, cross-functional experience. And they talk about wanting to use that experience to eventually launch their own venture capital fund so that they can actively help, you know, portfolio companies grow and pitch in that way. So that's the candidacy. I know we had a couple of, you know, kind of concerns with this candidate as well as, I mean, there's some great stuff here too. And there was some good dialogue on the site from both you and one of our kind of regular posters on the site. So what do you make of this candidate? I mean, the GPA jumps out, right? But what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, thanks again to Greg the Egg for the great contribution, I have to say. And now I have to read their comments first before I have my point of view, otherwise I might get it wrong. But no, it's actually really good. And I encourage all of our community to sort of contribute in that way to the extent that they can. It's always good to have different voices sort of weighing in. But again, thanks to Greg the Egg. Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, Graham, from a work experience standpoint, and then the MBA, the goals and what they want to do afterwards, and their sort of volunteer contribution in terms of helping underrepresented minorities, you know, on a funding standpoint. I mean, I don't know if you could get a better sounding profile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just sort of reads really well. I mean, obviously, you know, VC is not necessarily consistent across all firms and operations and so on and so forth. So we need to know a little bit more about the specifics of the work experience, the deal flow and that kind of stuff, you know, how active they've been and stuff. But it that side of it sounds super, super good to me, Graham, mm-hmm. Quite frankly. 740 GMAT, fantastic. 313 GPA, nah. So again, like the first candidate, this is definitely the weakest, or it appears to be the weakest element of the application, and is going to come under some scrutiny. Now, they say they've taken a couple of classes, they've got A's in them, so that's very good. They've made the right moves, their major, kind of like the first candidate in chemical engineering. In this case, it's math and physics, which again, are subjects way beyond my own comprehension. but certainly a challenging. But quite frankly, and what I didn't like particularly is the candidate basically just said, you know, my GPA was not my priority in school. The concern with that to this candidate directly is, well, make sure, again, in your application, in your applications, that doesn't come across as a potential issue when you get into grad school. Schools don't want to admit people that are just going to be very active socially but not do well academically. They want candidates that have a really good balance in terms of their perspective of what they're going to do during business school. So that's something that this candidate needs to consider. I'd like to know a little bit more about the story in terms of how they acquired their situation in VC coming directly out of undergrad, because that's quite unusual, I think, Graham. I mean, in my mind, if you've got experience in VC, you've probably done a couple of years investment banking first. But I could be a little wrong there, so maybe I'll let you pick up the baton a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my view is, yeah, most people working in VC have either done banking for a couple of years, or they've been like a successful entrepreneur, sold a company or two, and then ended up in VC as a place to kind of plant their fortune and begin investing. So it is unusual. And I agree with you 100%. Not all VC funds are created equal. So I would want to know more about this. But again, there's a lot to like here. I mean, I love that they've set up a nonprofit to help URMs get into, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, of interesting things. The one thing I was looking at is, you know, obviously the GPA is the big red flag, right? Will an M7 program or a top school, you know, can they overcome it? You know, and I think when I looked at the course load or, you know, what they indicated, you know, physics, they were kind of a math major with physics minor. And they also said they did all the pre-med coursework. And so I was like, wow, that's you know, quantitatively rigorous and challenging. But the pre-med thing actually raised an eyebrow for me. Just that I was kind of like, well, why did they do pre-med? Was there like another plan originally? Again, not a big deal, but I just was like, ooh, that's kind of, are they sure they want an MBA kind of thing? But again, they're going to need to explain what happened, and they're going to need to do a better job of explaining it than by just indicating, oh, you know, coursework wasn't my priority. I would love to know where they went to school, because that would influence my view. If, you know, if they're a math and physics major at MIT and got a 3.1, that's going to feel different to me than if they were at, you know, some unknown institution, right? So it would be good to know that. And then, you know, the only other thing I was curious about is they indicated that they took a couple of executive education classes, and I guess as a means to like bolster their, you know, transcript. And I'd want to know, well, what, you know, where did you take those classes? What were they in? Are they relevant? Are they the typical kinds of courses that we would counsel someone to take to prepare for business school? They're in a bit of a tough spot, because if they were a math major, you know, they've probably done, you know, some of the usual suspects that we counsel people to take, like accounting or statistics or calculus, right? Mm. So, but it'd be good to know, yeah, from that perspective.
Yeah, my pushback on that, Graham, a little bit is this candidate could make the argument, not that you're arguing in an application, but could make the case that by taking a couple of executive education courses, whatever they are, they're signalling they're more serious now about the learning environment,
yes.
i.e., you know, they've got a 313 because they weren't really that focused on their GPA, but now, more recently, they've taken courses because they want to learn. So it might not be your stats and calculus type courses that we would might counsel, because clearly with a math and physics undergraduate degree, they probably dream about this stuff, right? I mean, they don't need to be going to class too.
Right.
But there is an argument to be said for just going into sort of continuing education,
sure,
for the sakes of it, to show that you have that interest. And the fact that they say they got A's, which I'm not disputing, but obviously a lot of exec ed type coursework is either non-graded, pass-fail, or something like that. So if you're getting grades for these courses, you're showing your commitment and your success. So that's very good.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing, and then I'll turn it back to you, Graham, is in terms of choice of schools, if you've done 5 years in VC, been successful, you have this grand plan and so on and so forth, I can imagine that in terms of target schools, you've got to go to one of the top schools. You're not going to really realise much gain by going to a school that's not one of the very top schools, I would imagine, right? But I'll let you comment on that.
Well, I mean, the thing that struck me is they have 10 schools on their list. And I recognize that sometimes when someone has a red flag, they kind of think they need to cast a really wide net in hopes, you know, of hitting somewhere. But I was worried that, yeah, that's a lot of schools and they should narrow it down. And I also would sort of defer to them as to, you know, they're in VC, so they should know which of these programs, I mean, several jump out at me, are really good with VC placement and access to that community, or really access to just tech, right? Because they want to work in tech first before they set up their own VC.
Right.
So they'd need to investigate the strength in both of those areas, ideally. And, you know, obviously schools on the West Coast like Haas and Stanford jump out as being, you know, pretty good at placing people at these top tech companies. But so does Wharton with their West Coast campus, and MIT has a big reputation in the domain. So there are schools on the list that clearly could get them their job at Amazon or wherever they want to go. But I think they need to narrow this down. And the trouble, I'm guessing, that they're facing is that they want to apply to all the top, you know, the top dogs, because those are the ones that can really help them when it comes time to setting up their own VC fund in the long term, in terms of network and all that. But that they can't just apply to those schools. So they need to have some other schools on their list. And I see they have, you know, NYU Stern and Cornell, and looks like they have, you know, Tuck. So they're mixing a little bit with M7 and non-M7. But yeah, it's tough, because ideally I wouldn't, you know, recommend they apply to more to like than six. So they're going to need to whittle this down. And I would, you know, they probably should just look at placement stats and see where, you know, which schools are doing a really good job at sending people into the firms that they most want to work for. But again, yeah, it's tough, because as we've heard many a VC person say, oh, I'm only going to go off to school if it's really worth it and if it's a top school. So there is sometimes that bit of attitude out there. I get it. I think obviously, you know, business school has a lot to offer. Even if you have a great job, you can learn quite a bit. So it's tricky.
Yeah.
And I did want to give also a shout out to Greg the Egg for his good comments. He also revealed that his username is apparently a reference to a character in a TV show called Succession, which is on HBO, which I've never heard of, but now I have. So I'll have to investigate that. So thanks, Greg, for all the comments. And yeah, and as to this poster, I think it's going to be tough. But I don't know. Part of me says that given all that they've done and the real appeal of their profile in terms of some of that, you know, that nonprofit, I feel like they could overcome this. I mean, you can get into an M7 with a 3.1. It happens, right? So you just have to tell the right story, and you know, obviously they have a great test score, and that helps too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This person more than likely should end up in a top school. for sure.
Yeah. So I know people sort of say, oh, no, well, if you don't have above a 3.3, you're kind of toast. And I don't think that's true. I think schools take risks, and especially when the candidate's done some extraordinary things, which seems to be the case here. So best of luck to that person. And thanks for posting. Alex, we've reached the end. Once again, listeners, you've somehow spent 30 plus minutes with us, and another week has gone by. But Alex will be back in 1 week's time with a whole new set of Flywire folks. And so looking forward to reviewing those. And thanks for all the time you put into picking these out each week, Alex.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks a lot. And best of luck, everyone, and stay safe.
All right, we'll see you next week.